I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's November 28th, and we have a lot to talk about. My guest today is Chris Holland. Chris had a successful career working as a paralegal when he was diagnosed with MS in 2004. And while everyone reacts differently to being diagnosed, no one could have predicted what happened next, as Chris lost everything, battling demons he never imagined he would ever face. But it would be a mistake betting against Chris Holland's resilience. Bouncing back, Chris decided to pursue his lifelong dream of becoming a chef. Today, Chris is a three-time Food Network Chopped champion and the owner and executive chef at Cantina in Spark Hill, New York. It wasn't an easy journey to the life he's living today, and as you'll hear, Chris doesn't pull any punches in describing it. But before we get to my conversation with Chris Holland, there are a few other things that you should know about. November is National Family Caregivers Month, and as someone who spent 23 years as an MS caregiver, I appreciate that since 1997, the U.S. has designated a month to acknowledge the often invisible contributions made every day by 53 million unpaid family caregivers across the United States. And if you're caring for a friend, family member, partner, or spouse who's living with MS, I have some news to share. But before we get to that news, it's impossible to talk about caregiving without talking about the lifelong contributions to raising awareness and providing support for caregivers led by former First Lady Rosalynn Carter. Mrs. Carter once said that there are only four kinds of people in the world: those who have been caregivers, those who are currently caregivers, those who will be caregivers, and those who will need a caregiver. And over the course of her lifetime, Mrs. Carter filled every one of those roles. In 1987, Mrs. Carter founded the Rosalynn Carter Institute for Caregivers, an organization dedicated to supporting family caregivers through leading research projects and strategic initiatives, developing and implementing evidence-based programs, and advocating for public policy that recognizes and supports the role of the family caregiver. Rosalynn Carter passed away on November 19th, and the work of the Rosalynn Carter Institute for Caregivers, along with her decades of public service and her advocacy on behalf of women's rights and mental health, will all serve as a lasting legacy to one of the most remarkable first ladies ever to grace the White House. If you're caring for someone who's living with MS, I want to tell you about two I Conquer MS initiatives that you'll want to check out and I hope participate in. Last week, I Conquer MS announced that they were expanding their patient-powered research network to include MS caregivers. The launch of I Conquer MS Caregivers includes a new website and research program focused on the needs, preferences, and insights of MS caregivers. The progressive nature of MS means that at some point, a substantial number of partners, parents, extended family members, and friends will care for a loved one living with MS. Now, that care can range anywhere from managing medications to assisting with every basic task of daily living. The progressive and long-term nature of MS means that MS caregivers take on a responsibility that can increase over time and last for decades. And research shows that these contributions come at an unacceptably high cost, as caregivers themselves face a significantly increased risk of reduced health and well-being. And still, there's very little research focused on identifying best practices for MS caregivers, and very little direction provided for how to best avoid falling into that mental and emotional abyss known as caregiver burnout. I Conquer MS Caregivers has been created specifically to fill that research gap. By contributing information through online surveys and sharing ideas for research questions, MS caregivers can play an active role in shaping and conducting research focused on improving the health, well-being, and quality of life of other MS caregivers. And they'll be able to connect with a virtual circle of support that's never existed before. You can get more information and sign up to participate in iConquer MS Caregivers by visiting iConquerMS.org/caregivers, and you'll find that link in today's show notes. One of the best things about the internet is the seemingly endless amount of information that's available on any subject you could possibly think of. And one of the worst things about the internet is the seemingly endless amount of misinformation that's available. And sometimes it can be difficult trying to separate the wheat from the chaff, identifying the good information from the not-so-good and sometimes completely wrong information. One of the things I learned as an MS caregiver is that caregivers don't have a lot of time. Caring for a loved one while trying to take care of your own everyday responsibilities can be burdensome. And while it's great to be able to turn to the internet for helpful resources and information, sifting through the information that isn't helpful to find the information that is helpful can take more time and energy than a caregiver may have. So iConquer MS created a Care Partner Advisory Board to actually review all the available online information and resources and curate the most relevant, most reliable, most accurate, and most supportive online resources for MS caregivers. These resources, curated by MS Care Partners for MS Care Partners, will be featured in a web portal that's already nearing completion. In the spirit of full transparency, I should tell you that it's my honor to serve as the co-lead on both of these projects, and I'm excited to share them both with you. You can visit iConquer MS Caregivers and sign up today. And at the start of 2024, you'll be able to visit the caregiver resource portal that we're working on. If you'd like to review the details of that project, we've just published a paper that explains the project in this month's issue of the International Journal of MS Care, and you'll find a link to that paper in today's show notes. The holiday season celebrates miracles, and while this next story may not be a full-blown miracle, it at least delivers a happy ending for some of the folks living with MS in Dawson City, Yukon. Now, Dawson City is a town located on the Yukon River in northwest Canada, less than 200 miles from Alaska. It's probably best known as a base for miners in the 19th century during the Klondike Gold Rush. At that time, the population of Dawson City was about 40,000. Today, it's about 1,400. And 2 months ago, the Yukon Hospital Corporation notified people living with MS in Dawson City that they would no longer be able to receive their infusion treatments at the Dawson Hospital. Going forward, people receiving their disease-modifying therapy by infusion would have to travel to the town of Whitehorse, which would require booking air travel and staying overnight in Whitehorse, all of which represents the kind of added expense that no one's health insurance is going to cover. But when you live in a small town on the edge of the Canadian Northwest Territories, I think people learn to come together to help each other out. And the good news in Dawson City is that another local business has stepped up. And so people living with MS in Dawson City will be able to get their infusion therapy at the local Yukon Spa. So Infusion Day, at least in Dawson City, can now legitimately be considered a spa day. And the owner of Yukon Spa has already set things up so that the spa will be able to bill people's insurance for their infusion therapy, helping locals avoid thousands of dollars in out-of-pocket expense. It probably doesn't qualify as a holiday miracle, but if you happen to be living with MS in Dawson City, Yukon, it just might feel like one. While we're talking about miracles, it may very well be a miracle that my guest, Chris Holland, is with us to share his story. Today, Chris is the successful chef owner of Cantina in Spark Hill, New York, but Chris's story could have easily ended on a much more tragic note. You're about to hear what resilience sounds like when we meet my guest, Chris Holland. Chris Holland was working as a paralegal when he was diagnosed with MS in 2004. Now, the next chapter of Chris's life wasn't one that he or anyone would have imagined, but it would be a mistake betting against Chris Holland's resilience. Bouncing back, Chris decided to pursue his lifelong dream of becoming a chef. Today, Chris is a three-time Food Network Chopped champion and the owner and executive chef at Cantina in Sparkill, New York, where he's applying a unique Asian twist to small plates, tacos, and what looks like an amazing cocktail menu. Welcome to the podcast, Chris.
Great to be here.
First, how are you?
I'm good. I am very stressed. I just, you know, we're coming up on the one-year anniversary of our restaurant, so it's the first time I've ever owned my own restaurant, and it's a lot more work than I thought it was going to be, a lot more stress than I thought it was going to be. It keeps me busy, though. You know, I can't complain about much. My health has been better than it's been since my early 20s. And, you know, I'm going crazy every day, but it's going crazy doing something I love. So I have my health right now. I have my family and I have my business. So overall, I'd say I'm doing pretty well.
Overall, I'd say that was a pretty great answer. You know, I mentioned in introducing you that it was a lifelong dream to become a chef. Why cooking? What is it about being a chef that speaks to you?
The earliest memories of my life involved cooking. My father was a chef before I was born, and it was the one time where I was always able to connect with him was when he was cooking, and I would just watch him, and it was just fascinating to me. The idea of taking things and changing them around and making them new, and then using that to make people happy. I don't know. It's just it's a beautiful thing. And, you know, I love science. Science is like one of my passions in the world. And I think cooking, I always say cooking is the earliest form of science, you know, like cavemen threw meat on a fire and it changed the way it tasted. So I love the science behind it. And then it's this sort of mashup between science and food, science and art that, you know, it allows me to express my creativity utilizing something I love, which is the science part. And then I get to make people happy. You know, I remember, you know, as a teenager cooking for my family, and I wouldn't even eat the dinners that I made. I just wanted to cook it and then watch them eat it because it was just, it's just something about having somebody enjoy something that you created that makes me happy.
Going from your job as a paralegal to following your passion as a chef, well, it wasn't a very smooth transition. Can you tell me about that chapter of your life?
Yeah, that was definitely not a smooth transition. So, you know, you had mentioned in the opening, I was a paralegal, and I was diagnosed with MS during my time working at a law firm. I was actually a paralegal that was in charge of a lot of people. I was a manager of many people in a law firm, and I was very successful at my job. I was studying to be a lawyer. You know, I was getting ready to apply to law schools, and I had a talent for the law. So that's why I pursued it. I was diagnosed with MS, and you know, I was a 22-year-old kid who was not ready for that diagnosis. And my life kind of fell apart. You know, the initial diagnosis brought pain, or the initial symptoms brought pain. And the pain turned into painkillers, and the painkillers turned into an addiction. And my life spiraled out of control. And you know, I went from very, very successful 23-year-old who was, you know, on a path to, you know, doing great things in the industry to, you know, 5 years later, basically being homeless, and finally hit rock bottom, found myself in a hospital, and I was treated for the addiction. And the recovery process began, and a few years into the recovery process, you know, I realized I was able to sort of reexamine my life. That's a big part of recovery, is sort of looking at yourself. And, you know, I realized that I had been through a lot of stuff for a 30-year-old, at the time, and all of this all of this stuff that I went through and I had come out the other side and I was still alive and kicking, that I wanted to pursue something that I loved. And as I said earlier, cooking was always there. It was always the thing that I loved more than anything else. I didn't know whether I was going to be good enough to do it professionally. I had only done, you know, home cooking, but I had a long conversation with my wife about it. You know, she basically said, you know, and we weren't really on the best financial footing, but she said, I can support us for a little while. It's your turn. Give it a try. If you don't try now, you'll regret it for the rest of your life. So I sort of walked away from the legal field and just sort of walked into the restaurant industry. And, you know, that began my culinary journey.
Working in a restaurant kitchen involves spending long hours on your feet, often in warm temperatures, and always dealing with the frequent tension and occasional bouts of anxiety that go along with being a chef. All of those things are supposed to be bad for someone who's living with MS. Tell me how you do it.
You know, it's definitely an added challenge. It's an additional roadblock. It is there, and it's not, it is a tough industry, and it's not an industry that is very conducive to people with my condition. And at times it can be hard, but I always go back to what I've been through in the past. And this is nothing compared to that. You know, before I got into it, I had conversations with my doctor, my neurologist, about the condition. And she said, it is going to be harder for you to deal with. You are going to feel more tired than other people. You may get exasperations of existing damage. You know, they may pop back up. She said, but you're not going to do any more damage to yourself. So I always kind of keep that in mind. I have to manage the stress and anxiety. It's something, to be honest, I haven't been doing a great job of recently. But, you know, one of the things that I find very helpful is, you know, taking a lot of private time to myself, taking hikes and walks and sitting down. I'm a big fan of meditation to try and keep my brain in check. And then just a practical matter, and this is for, I think, every human on the planet, but especially people who work in the kitchens, water is your best friend in the world when you're in the kitchen. I try and drink a gallon of water every night that I work. And I know that it sounds like a small thing, but it's actually a huge thing for me. It's harder for me than I think it is for my peers. I watch people that I work with that they don't have to deal with the things that I have to deal with. But then again, everybody has their own things that they have to deal with. You know, every single person in the world has something going on. And there's an old saying that if everybody took all of their problems and threw them in the middle of the room, everybody would be fighting to get back their own because they wouldn't want to deal with the stuff that other people have to deal with. So, you know, it is what it is. It may be harder on me than it is for other people, but then again, I don't know how hard it is on other people. And I don't know what it would be like for me if I didn't have MS. You know what I mean? Like, my life is my life and I have to live my life. So I don't know what it would be like if I was just a normal person. I have no idea. I have no basis of comparison. So it is what it is. I deal with it. And, you know, as long as it's not making my condition worse, I'm okay with being a little bit tired at the end of our shifts. You know,
you're talking about working in a kitchen. While a lot of the world has returned to some semblance of post-pandemic normal, the hospitality industry has had a more challenging time reopening. How are things at Cantina?
They're good. We're a small restaurant. So our biggest challenge is that we can't fit enough people in. We're busy all the time. And so we try and get you in, get you fed, and get you out as quick as we can so we can get more people in. But we've come back pretty fine post-COVID. the location that I'm in was actually the restaurant that I was the chef at prior to that. It was called Divine Bar, and Divine Bar was very much hurt by COVID. It was more fine dining than the concept that I'm doing now. And that's one of the reasons why I decided to change the concept when I bought the place. I wanted to make it more fast casual, a little bit less interaction with the service staff. And I wanted to make it more conducive to people getting takeout and to-go food. So I think we're on a good path post-COVID. Labor is still a big issue in restaurants. Nobody, you know, I think one of the things that COVID did was it sort of made a lot of people reevaluate what they were doing with their lives. And I think the hospitality industry got hurt the most by that. Yeah. A lot of people that were cooking found that they could do something else and make more money.
When you won your third CHOP championship in 2019, I believe, you donated the $10,000 prize money to the National MS Society. And today you're a member of the Board of Trustees for the MS Society's New Jersey chapter. What's important to you about connecting with the MS Society?
Well, you know, I spoke earlier about what happened to me when I was initially diagnosed. You know, it was a 22-year-old kid who went through all the stages of loss, the, you know, denial, anger, depression, all of that kind of stuff. And I think about now that I'm an old man of many years later, I think about that kid today that just got diagnosed at 22 years old, and that he or she is scared and, you know, terrified and angry. And I want to be able to reach out to that person and try and, you know, give them some hope that their life is not over, because I thought my life was over when I was 22 years old. I thought I was going to be, by 30, I was going to be in a wheelchair, or I was going to be blind, or any number of crazy scenarios that my mind brought up. And because of the MS Society, you know, when I was diagnosed, there was 3 medicines on the market, and all of them had really bad side effects and they didn't work very well. I think now there's like 20 medicines on the market now. And the MS Society is a big reason for that, the research that's being done. It's a big reason why the 22-year-old kid who gets diagnosed right now has a chance to live a normal life. It's a big reason why I'm at now 40, what am I, 43 now? 40, holy cow, I'm 43. Well, I am 43 and I'm, you know, I'm very healthy. I'm a very healthy person. I'm probably in better shape now than I was when I was 22. That's because of the research that's getting done on this condition. And research doesn't happen unless there's advocates that are pushing for it to happen. And the MS Society is at the forefront of that in MS. It's at the forefront in giving people information about what the actual disease is. And it all starts with that. MS has touched so many people since I've been diagnosed. There's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people have reached out to me that either have MS or they have a family member with MS. It's very prevalent in our, you know, in our society. And, you know, I wanted to be a part of that because I want to be of service to my community. I'm only sitting here today because when my life fell apart 20 years ago, you know, there was a hospital that I was able to go to for free that helped me start the journey to recovery. And then there was a group of men who took me under their wing and helped me learn how to live my life a different way. So in a lot of ways, I'm only alive because other people in my community gave me help. And I find working with the MS Society is a way for me to pay it forward and hopefully help other people, even people that I'll never even meet, but to put a little bit of good back into the world, because the world's given me a lot.
So one of those 22-year-old kids just received their MS diagnosis. They're one of the people you just described who you'll never meet, but they may be listening to our conversation right now. What do you want to say to them?
Well, I would say, you know, first and foremost that, you know, very simply, like, you know, your life is not over. I'm going to rip off a quote from, I might butcher it a little bit, but I'll get the gist of it, from Michael J. Fox. He's somebody that I admire quite a bit. Years ago in an interview, he said that if you spend your time imagining the worst case scenario and it actually happens, you will have had to live it twice. We have time on this with this earth. The worst case scenario may wind up happening to you. It may wind up happening to me. But thinking about it right now in the present does nothing. It does nothing but ruin your present. And the present is all we have. I know for me, I wasted years of my life, years that I'll never give back, thinking about the fact that, or trying not to think about the fact that I would one day be in a wheelchair, or I would one day, you know, wouldn't be able to walk. And the only thing that happened was I wasted 5 years of time that I was able to walk, that I was able to live a good life, that I was able to do whatever I wanted to. And it wasn't until I let go of that, that I was actually able to live. And I would hope that, you know, the 22-year-old could kind of look at me and say, and not only look at the successes that I've had since my diagnosis, but also look at the failures that I've had since my diagnosis. I've had a lot of successes in my life post 31 years old, but I wasted 24 to 30. It's just time that just disappeared off of the face of the earth. You know, I spent it sitting in my apartment, you know, basically just taking one pill at a time all day. So 4 years of my life is gone. Because for nothing, you know, and I don't want that to happen to other 22-year-olds. And I'm not talking specifically addiction, because that was just the manifestation of my denial. It could take a lot of different forms, but you know, life is there to be lived. And I know it's all of this stuff is just a lot of it's cliche, but really all we have is today. We don't have tomorrow. Tomorrow's not promised to anybody. It's not promised to you. It's not promised to me. It's not promised to the healthiest person on the planet. So whether we have MS or not, you know, we're only promised today. And, you know, I don't want to see other kids waste their present worrying about a future that may or may not come.
Well, Chris Holland, thank you for being part of the MS movement and for all you do to raise awareness and support for the MS community. And thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/326. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or a text. And if you have a minute, I hope you'll visit the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store and download the free Real Talk MS app for your iOS or Android smartphone or tablet. It's the best way for us to stay connected. The app will automatically download the latest episode of Real Talk MS. You'll be able to access any of our past episodes. You'll be able to save your favorite episodes. And it's a great way for me to share bonus content with you. The app is free, so I hope you'll download it today. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.